Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. Jeff Fawcett and I come to you weekly with a critical independent voice on the politics and practice of health and the environment.
As I'm sure you know, the spread of the Zika virus is of growing concern. It was not long ago that the CDC, and with it the World Health Organization and other public health agencies, issued a red alert regarding Zika infections. Although no longer on red alert, the CDC is fast at work with public education about the threat, improved diagnostic technologies, and preventive measures consisting principally of new vaccines and pesticides for vector control. Infection by the virus per se is not the concern. The threat the CDC seeks to vanquish is the increased risk of infants born with microcephaly, damage to a fetus in development that causes the child to have a smaller than normal head and accompanying brain damage. The threat has now widened to include a wide range of neurological birth defects. Unfortunately, despite the CDC's declaration in April 2016 that infection by the Zika virus has been proven the cause of these birth defects, the science is not, nor has it ever been, conclusive. In fact, the CDC seems to have rushed to the conclusion that the Zika virus causes the birth defects out of concern based on questionable science without adequately examining other explanations. Their motive seems fairly clear to me from what they have to say in their definitive paper in the New England Journal of Medicine, in which the authors express a concern that the public isn't taking the crisis seriously enough, and so it is incumbent upon them to turn up the heat. In other words, we're not acting right, so the experts have to frighten us into doing the right thing, at least so far as the CDC is concerned. I've asked two people to join me today. First, I'll talk with Yonir Bar-Yam about the science behind the conclusions the CDC has drawn, and then I'll talk with Marco Caceres about how the Zika crisis developed and how the media has covered it. First, Professor Yonir Yambar, who is president of the New England Complex Systems Institute and lead author of Is Zika the Cause of Microcephaly?, published by the Institute. He has over 200 publications, including Dynamics of Complex Systems, a textbook, Making Things Work, a practical book on applications to real-world concerns, and articles in Science, Nature, and Physical Review Letters. He advises on global crises and strategy. He has conducted research on the global food crisis, cited by Wired magazine as among the top 10 discoveries in science in 2011, and received many press awards for his scientific visualizations. He advised Congress on the financial crisis and served as a visiting scholar at Harvard's Department of Molecular and Cellular Biology and at the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. In addition to leading the New England Complex Systems Institute, he is a research faculty at the MIT Media Lab. Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness, Yonir.
Pleased to be here. Thank you.
The CDC and the media with it describe the origins of Zika-caused birth defects as occurring in Brazil, giving the very strong impression that this was happening all over Brazil. Is that what your research found?
So the outbreak that occurred of microcephaly in Brazil starting in August of 2015 was very strongly localized in the northeast regions of Brazil. And previous to that time, the Zika virus and its epidemic started toward the beginning of that year. And that led people to the conclusion that the Zika virus might be the cause. The studies that were done identified individual cases where Zika virus was present in a neurological tissue of fetuses born with microcephaly. But the confirmation of the Zika as present in the many microcephaly cases that had occurred was not found. So evidence of Zika infection was found in a relatively small minority of the cases in northeast Brazil. And so our analysis was mostly focused on tracking the way the Zika virus spread led to microcephaly in other places. And in Brazil, there was a very apparent epidemic of microcephaly. It included, up to now, there's 2,000 confirmed cases. There's probably about 8,000 initial reports of cases, and again, 2,000 confirmed. And even as of 9 months ago, there are about 1,500 confirmed cases of microcephaly. So there's a lot of cases compared to what might be expected under normal circumstances. And there are a number of cases that occur in populations everywhere in the world. So it's not something that doesn't happen at all, but in northeast Brazil, it's clearly out of the ordinary.
Now,
as the virus spread to other places, there were a number of cases of microcephaly that were reported. And the reporting of those few cases, people claimed, were linked to the epidemic of Zika. However, the number of cases remained small, only a few cases. So the analysis that we did was all of the cases themselves was just to look at the consistency between the cases that occurred in northeast Brazil and the cases that occurred elsewhere. And the reporting of cases in other places, aside from the fact that press was talking about them as being linked to the same thing, was not apparent that it would be consistent with 1,000 or 2,000 cases in Brazil. In fact, there are only very few of them reported in most other countries, and not necessarily at the same level of appearance as in Brazil.
Now, I assume that you're alluding to what the CDC alludes to, which is the occurrence of Zika with microcephaly in French Polynesia and in Colombia.
Yeah. So there are two places where there's been more intensive investigation of the cases. In French Polynesia, there was an epidemic. There was it's a small population, but there was an outbreak of Zika, and there was a retrospective study that identified a number of mostly abortions that were considered to by the people who did that study to be as a result of the Zika virus causing microcephaly, and the number of cases is 7 or 8. There was only one live birth that could be called a microcephaly birth that was outside of background rates. So the statistics were very small, but there's a reason to believe that the evidence there provided a suggestion that at about 1% of first trimester pregnancies, Zika is causing microcephaly. In Colombia, there is the reports by the government have been over the past year have been giving us information about the number of microcephaly cases linked to Zika infections, and the number of cases has been increasing over the year. And at some point it became the discussion of the number of cases became critical because the rate of microcephaly did increase above the background rate. Our analysis of the number of cases that were present suggested that there were in the teens of cases that were due to background rates. But the number of cases increased beyond that, and we now have good evidence from the government reports that there are about 40 or 50 cases of microcephaly that can really be directly attributed to Zika infections. That number, however, is significantly smaller than would have been expected if the same thing was going on in Colombia as happened in northeast Brazil. At the same time, looking in Brazil itself, there is a wide discrepancy of rates of Zika Zika-related microcephaly. In other words, the rates of microcephaly did not increase consistent with what was expected from the Zika infections. And there began to be press reports as well as data that was possible to look at that the discrepancies. And so if you look at the reported rates of Zika infections across different states of Brazil, and you look at the reported rates of microcephaly, the ratios between the microcephaly and the Zika infections range very widely, over three orders of magnitude. So it's very hard to understand if Zika is the cause of microcephaly, why the ratio between cases of microcephaly and cases of Zika would vary so widely.
So if I understand you correctly, at least what I read from the paper that you wrote, is Zika the cause of microcephaly, is not that you have proven that Zika doesn't cause this, but that because of this discrepancy in how cases of Zika occurred with microcephaly, that there's actually no really well-developed explanation of why this wide variation in occurrence of those two things together.
Yes. I mean, this is an ongoing public health phenomenon. People are collecting data. They're analyzing specific cases. So there's a baby that's born with microcephaly, or there's a symptom of Zika infection. Determining whether or not someone has microcephaly is being measured by a particular criterion, head circumference. The determination of whether someone has Zika infection is difficult. The symptoms sometimes, or most of the time actually, are so mild that we don't know that someone even has it. So if we receive reports of the number of cases, it's very hard to know what is the reliability of those numbers. So to say that there are discrepancies means that there is question or uncertainty about what we know. It doesn't mean that one has demonstrated one or the other.
You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. I'm talking today with Yanir Bar-Yam, who is the lead author of the article, the report, is Zika the cause of microcephaly? And we're talking about Zika virus and birth defects. To return back to your work and what you found and did not find, you just mentioned that the criteria for clinically identifying microcephaly are pretty well defined, but that the clinical ability to identify Zika infection, especially because it's so mild, is of some difficulty, and that is one of the reasons for being cautious about jumping to the conclusion that Zika causes microcephaly, mm-hmm. let alone the other birth defects that it's being attributed to. That is a conclusion which the CDC has officially come to. As I mentioned earlier, they published a paper in the New England Journal of Medicine that was titled Zika Virus and Birth Defects, Reviewing the Evidence for Causality. And in that paper, they argue that Zika can be definitively identified as the cause of microcephaly and those birth defects.
Yeah.
Just in terms of that paper itself, from your perspective, we already know that, that your paper argues that there just isn't enough evidence, but does their paper on it, on itself succeed in successfully arguing for the causality?
So I think the answer is pretty clearly not. And in recent months, there's been fairly public discussion of the fact that there is new questions about whether or not Zika is indeed causing the majority of cases in Brazil. The argument that was made by the CDC in the New England Journal of Medicine was based upon reasonable likelihood of causation. They acknowledged in the paper that there was no smoking gun. They based their argument on a few factors. One is the proper timing, the fact that the Zika epidemic occurred at about the right time that would have led its causation to result in the microcephaly cases. The other arguments were mostly based upon individual cases, the existence of a few cases where Zika was directly linked to microcephaly. Now, one of the things that we know is that there are a number of viral infections that cause microcephaly. So it's not surprising that Zika causes a few cases of microcephaly. It joins a number of other infections that do so. The question really was whether it can cause the large number of cases that were observed in northeast Brazil. And the only real evidence for that in the study was the timing of the infection relative to the cases. And that's not a very strong evidence. And there is significant information that could be interpreted as evidence against. When cases of microcephaly are tested for evidence of Zika infection, either in the babies or the mothers, it's been very difficult to find the evidence, either in DNA or in immunological tests, that will confirm that, in fact, the large majority of those cases are, in fact, due to Zika infection. That's one of the most important gaps in the story that Zika is the cause of microcephaly. And again, the second and major absence of evidence, if you will, or really evidence against, is the fact that in other countries there haven't been similar numbers of cases. If one looks at the World Health Organization list of countries and number of cases, Brazil stands unique in having thousands of cases, whereas other countries there are really much fewer cases and not in an obvious way consistent with the number of cases in Brazil.
So your organization is called the New England Complex Systems Institute. And in looking at your organization's website, you don't have an obvious pedigree or focus on medical public health issues. How is it that you took up this issue of the Zika birth defect causality?
So we have been very interested in the prediction of the increasing risk of epidemics because of increasing global transportation. So we wrote a paper that predicted that there would be much larger Ebola outbreaks because of the increasing transportation. And we wrote that paper 8 years before the Ebola outbreak happened in 2014. Now, once it happened, we were very concerned about the response to that epidemic because we didn't see it as being very effective. And our focus has been on something that in complex systems can be well understood, which is public collective response, whereas many medical authorities are mostly concerned about a patient coming to a doctor and receiving treatment from the doctor we are very aware of the power of communities to respond to risks, and particularly epidemic risks that are threatening the health of the entire population. And during the Ebola epidemic, we strongly advocated a community-based response, and it turns out that that response from analysis that we've done since then is likely the reason that the Ebola epidemic was halted and eventually we were able to defeat it. Now, when the Zika epidemic started, we similarly advocated community-based response, and we've been quite disappointed that the public health authorities, including the CDC and the World Health Organization, as well as the local authorities in South America, have not been taking advantage of an approach that would enable the communities to engage in mosquito eradication efforts that would be effective at stopping the propagation of Zika. Now, that became one of our activities, but when we heard about the question of whether or not Zika is a cause, we looked at alternatives, and we found that the authorities were not paying sufficient attention to the alternative that was suggested by some physicians in Argentina and Brazil, which is the use of a pesticide, pyroproxifen, which is being placed in drinking water in Brazil in the favelas. Now, the drinking water in favelas doesn't come in pipes. It sits in barrels that are filled by trucks. And because it is standing water, it can serve as a breeding ground for mosquitoes. And in order to stop the mosquitoes, there have been pesticides being put in the drinking water. And in the fall of 2014, a new pesticide, it's not a new pesticide, it has other uses, but this is the first time that a pesticide has been used, this pesticide used in drinking water, was introduced into these drinking water containers in Brazil. The pesticide called pyroproxifen is a developmental disruptor in insects. And when the question was raised about whether it could be an alternative cause, it was rapidly dismissed by the authorities. And it's worth remarking that it has been approved in its use for this purpose by the authorities, by the World Health Organization and others, and therefore they may have reasons to think that it is not a potential cause. But when we looked at the biology of this pesticide, we found that it is closely related to other chemicals that are also causing birth defects, and that it is in fact cross-reactive with retinoic acid, which is vitamin A, which is a cause of microcephaly. Now, from this information, it is not possible for us to determine that pyroproxifen is a cause or the cause or the primary cause of microcephaly in Brazil, but it raises the question about whether or not this should be part of the research agenda, the scientific engagement in analyzing the causes of microcephaly.
Well, you're...
So our approach has been to recommend that there be further scientific inquiry into the cause that doesn't assume that Zika is the cause, if we have not determined it conclusively, but rather considers other possibilities. And here there's a really important point that should be made. One should understand that policy has to be driven not just by knowledge, but also by uncertainty. If we do not know for sure what is the cause, it is an imperative to consider the alternatives and even to shape policy based upon the absence of knowledge as well as knowledge. And this goes to a question of what is the nature of proof and what proof is needed before action should be taken. And in this context, it made sense from a policy perspective, at least from our view, that the use of pyroproxifen be stopped until determination had been made about the potential causes or the actual causes of microcephaly in Brazil.
Now, this is a little, it isn't off topic, but that is one of the things that rather stopped me when I was reading the New England Journal of Medicine, the CDC's report in New England Journal of Medicine, is that part of their argument is that really there weren't any other viable explanations, and I was well aware of the pesticide discussion that you just beautifully summarized. What I wonder is the extent to which people in the favelas had any opportunities to do the kind of thing which you talked about even earlier, which is community-based eradication. And I say that because the engine that has left the station in terms of CDC action and policy is focused exclusively on vector eradication with pesticides and with vaccinations. That seems almost, what aren't we seeing at the CDC that there's a problem with, although they're not recommending that specific pesticide, but the question is, am I right in seeing that the CDC has committed to a certain path of prevention and policy action that precludes what you've described as really the sensible way to develop the science around this?
I think there are the public health response has been fundamentally pessimistic about the ability to intervene in the transmission of Zika on the short term, and has really been focused on eventual and long-term responses that might arise, particularly, as you note, through vaccination. I'm not satisfied that the authorities, including the CDC, have paid attention to alternatives. There have been pilot studies, and there are policies in other parts of the world that use alternative methods of vector control. And I can explain them briefly. The idea is that the mosquitoes breed in standing water and in and around the house. In order to eradicate the mosquitoes, in order to prevent the mosquitoes from propagating, one of the best ways is to just eliminate the standing water. But it's very hard to get rid of all of it. It turns out that there is a trick. If you standing water and then drain it once a day, you can stop the mosquitoes from propagating. These are called ovitraps, and it's been tested, and it's actually been tested in communities in Brazil and was shown to be effective. We advocated that early on as a mechanism for inhibiting the propagation of Zika. Now, at this point, Zika, in fact, may have infected enough of the population that it will, that the question of its propagation, at least in some parts, may be impossible because it's propagated so widely. I don't know. That's something also that should be studied scientifically. There are many questions that one could address scientifically about both the existing dynamics of the epidemic and of its prevention, and very little of that was done. What was the focus of activity has been not very apparent, but to the extent that it is something that is publicly known, most likely the arrows have pointed to the development of vaccinations.
Well, I am afraid we are totally out of time. This has been really informative and helpful. Yanir, how can listeners learn more about your work?
So the New England Complex Systems Institute is my home institution, and we are at the initials necsi.edu online. And if anybody would like to email me, my email is my first name, Yanir, Y-A-N-E-E-R, at necsi.edu.
Yanir Bar-Yam is president of the New England Complex Systems Institute and lead author of Is Zika the Cause of Microcephaly? Thank you for your time and for your work.
Thank you very much.
Time for a musical break. Stay tuned. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion of Zika virus and birth defects by talking to a journalist who's been covering the issue since it first started. Be right back. Welcome back to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, for a free stream of this show, information about today's show and over 600 past shows, and access to show recordings using our library card feature. To contact us, send email to admin, A-D-M-I-N, at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Our show today is about Zika virus and birth defects. I've just talked with Yanir Bar-Yam, director of the New England Complex Systems Institute and lead author of Is Zika the Cause of Microcephaly? To which the answer seems to be no. So now I want to turn to how this crisis developed and how the media has covered it. I'm joined by Marco Caceres, who is the managing editor and principal editorial writer for the online journal The Vaccine Reaction, sponsored by the National Vaccine Information Center. Marco is also a market analyst for a small aerospace consulting firm just outside Washington, D.C. Formerly, he worked as a legislative aide in the U.S. Senate. He has written extensively about the Zika issue. His most recent article is CDC's Rasmussen paper on Zika and microcephaly, Poor Case for Smoking Gun. Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness, Marco.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You followed this issue from the start. Tell us something about how this how it developed, particularly in the media.
Right. I think if you go back to about October of last year, 2015, is when you started to see the first sprinkling of articles in the popular press and magazines around the world, certainly in the United States, about an emerging epidemic of this of microcephaly in Brazil, and microcephaly being a birth defect primarily characterized by smaller than normal heads in children. It's something that visually is a little horrifying, to say the least. It's not just the smaller head, but also brain damage, different levels of brain damage. The numbers that started to be reported around the fall of last year were in the thousands, and that was alarming because on any given year in Brazil, the number of cases of microcephaly was anywhere between 200, 300, And suddenly you saw this big spike occurring in 1 year. And so everybody became very alarmed in certainly within the Brazilian government, Brazilian health authorities, but also with the world within the World Health Organization and then the CDC as well, and other agencies related to health in the United States. And so as the articles started accumulating in the press, there was obviously pressure by politicians, by public health people to see what's going on. And so you started seeing American public health officials, scientists, traveling to Brazil and communicating with Brazilian health authorities to try to get a feel for what was going on. Throughout November, December, the articles continued. And at some point, I believe around December or January of this year, you saw a number of 4,000 to 5,000 as the early part of this year progressed. And so now you're looking at a major crisis, because you're talking about an increase, a significant increase from 200 to 300 a year to possibly 4,000 to 5,000. What is interesting is that by early this year, perhaps the first quarter of this year, you started to see reports coming in from Brazil and being published in some publications in this country, the United States, that those figures of 4,000, 5,000 were in fact inflated. Second look, many of these cases were in fact not microcephaly. They were simply children or infants that were born with small heads, but were perfectly normal. And so all of a sudden, this number of 4,000 or 5,000 or more was no longer valid, but the alarm had already been sounded. It's hard to figure out just how many authentic microcephaly cases there were in Brazil over the course of that year, of the last year, and the first half of this year. But it certainly isn't or wasn't 4,000 or 5,000.
I was going to ask, at this point, what is the response of the Brazilian public health officials?
As to the numbers of microcephaly cases?
Well, they're seeing these allegedly growing numbers, and clearly they're looking for causes.
Well, right.
What are they doing to find out what's causing this?
Well, early in the year, around January to February this year, the Brazilian health minister, I forget his name at the moment, actually came out, even before the CDC came out with its confirmation, that microcephaly was the Zika was the cause of the microcephaly cases in Brazil. Interestingly, when he did that, the World Health Organization, the CDC, and others, said no, it's too early to come up to that conclusion. So no, we still need a lot of research, a lot more long term studies before we can come to that conclusion. Now, this was around January or February of this year. Now, ever since certainly during the second half of this year, the Brazilian government has kind of taken a second look at the microcephaly cases in Brazil, and what they've noticed is that the vast majority, up to 75% or more, of the cases of microcephaly, of the authentic microcephaly cases, have occurred in a very small portion of the country, which is the northeastern portion. It's in a state called Pernambuco, begins with a P, P-E-R-N, and this is the fastest growing economically most developed area of Brazil, certainly over the last decade or so, it's been growing at a very fast pace. And also not only in terms of industry, but also in terms of agriculture. So now the Brazilian government is less focused on Zika and increasingly focused on what they're calling possible cofactors, things like pesticides, herbicides. So that's kind of where the Brazilians are now. But the CDC, the U.S. authorities, are still in Zika mode because they've already made their case to Congress, and Congress has granted a fair amount of money
Now,
for Zika research.
To back up a little bit, early on, when this crisis first emerged, there was a group of principally Argentinian physicians, as I recall, who were working in that area of Brazil, who argued and published that the problem here was from pesticides,
right.
particular pesticides, and Dr. Barjom spoke about those concerns about the effects that it was a developmental agent that was essentially intended to kill mosquitoes by causing birth defects, essentially.
Right.
At that point, they were joined by a group of Brazilian public researchers called Abrasre, an organization,
right.
who also published a report. There were reports of this, of pesticides being implicated in this. What happened to that focus early on?
Right. I think the doctors, the Argentine doctors' report, I think they were citing some reports by Abrasco. Abrasco is a Brazilian group, and they're an environmental group, and they have been fighting against pesticides, the use of pesticides in Brazil for a long time. And what the what both reports brought out was that there had been traces of contamination of the drinking water in certain areas of northeastern Brazil with pesticides primarily used both primarily in agriculture the defoliants to clear the jungle but also to kill insects as well. There was concern that might be the reason that that you were having these birth defects because of the contamination of the the water resources.
But then, in both the scientific journalism of the period, which I've looked not as extensively as you have, but my understanding is it was that view was attacked in,
yes.
for instance, Nature magazine, and after that, any discussion of pesticides causing this problem kind of disappeared from the discussion, and it's only now that the Brazilian government is even reviving it, and as you mentioned, the CDC is, the train has left the station.
Right. I mean, I think that was early on. Remember, this is early on. Around the first month or even the last months of last year, where these reports were coming out, and they were the government was still very concerned about this thing called Zika because it was still kind of a new thing. But keep in mind also that there are significant multinational company interests involved here. Brazil is one of those countries where they use pesticides, herbicides, all sorts of chemicals for industry and agriculture extremely liberally. There's lots of chemicals that have been banned in Europe and the United States that are used freely in Brazil, and particularly in the northeastern part of Brazil. And so it is not surprising that the government would try to push back on reports that say, hey, it's the chemicals, because the chemicals are very important to Brazil for economic development purposes. So that was something that was not they didn't want to take very seriously. And particularly when they didn't know that much about Zika, they preferred to jump on the Zika bandwagon at least until, we knew, we'd let more time go by and just to see what developed. So I think there was political pressure to kind of silence reports that pointed to something that was more environmental rather than viral.
I need to ID the show where you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. I'm talking today with Marco Caceres, who is a managing editor at The Vaccine Reaction and who has written extensively about the Zika crisis and its relationship to birth defects. So in early April of this year, 2016, actually I don't know, have his first name written down, the head
Tom,
of the
Tom Frieden.
Tom Frieden.
Yes, Tom.
Yes. Yeah, Tom Frieden goes before the U.S. House and is testifying for Congress to allocate almost $2 billion for Zika research, vaccine development, and other purposes. And during that, he repeats essentially what you have said, that we need this money for research. I guess about almost half of it is of that allocation, what they were asking for, was for research, because we still don't know that there's a relationship and before we can take good action, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Later the same month, four of the senior staff at the CDC who are involved one way or another, they're at director levels of different divisions of the CDC, publish a paper in the New England Journal of Medicine that's titled Zika Virus and Birth Defects, in which they argue that using this something called Shepherd's Criteria shows that, in fact, it's reasonable to say that Zika does cause microcephaly and implicates other birth defects. And so it then spreads to the media that it's now been proven that Zika causes microcephaly. As I mentioned before, then it's this Zika train is off and running. So I guess the question is, that suggests to me that CDC was committed. Is that what you're seeing in the research that you've done?
Yes. Broadly speaking, I think it's important to back up a little bit and understand that what the CDC says and what the media publishes oftentimes is not exactly the same thing, or at least, if it's not in the letter of the law, it's certainly not in the spirit. If you read what the CDC says in its press release regarding the confirmation that Zika virus can cause microcephaly, it's worded very carefully. So it's not saying necessarily that Zika is the cause. We've discovered that Zika is the cause of the epidemic of microcephaly cases in Brazil. It mentions almost nothing about Brazil, I don't think. It basically uses the word, the phrase, a cause of microcephaly. And so they're kind of hedging their bets a little bit. It's entirely possible that Zika virus may cause, in a very small percentage of cases, a birth defect. We don't know for sure yet, because the big studies, the long-term prospective studies involving thousands of pregnant women, and has not been done. And so you can't say that conclusively, but you can certainly speculate strongly. The point isn't so much whether it can cause microcephaly. The point is whether Zika is the cause or one of the major causes of the epidemic that we saw. That we've seen in Brazil. After all, it's the epidemic in Brazil that was the issue. It wasn't the fact that microcephaly wasn't the issue. We have hundreds, if not thousands, of cases of microcephaly in this country every year. And you've hardly ever heard of that because it's never been considered something of epidemic proportions. So the question is Zika the cause of what was going on in Brazil? And that question has not been adequately answered. I don't think the CDC feels like it's answered that question, and certainly the Brazilian government hasn't either. But as you said, we've now moved on. Now the media has gotten hold of this information, and they've kind of manipulated the wording a little bit so that you see headlines that say CDC confirms 100% that Zika is the cause of microcephaly. So to the average reader, they basically have said it's a done deal. We found out the cause, and now what's the next step? Of course, you develop a vaccine for it. You spend a lot more research money, but mainly to develop a vaccine, even though we still don't know if what's behind the cause of the spike in the number of microcephaly cases in Brazil.
So what happened to the $2 billion?
Well, of the 1.9, I forget how much the Congress appropriated. I thought it was less than 1.9. I think that's 1.9 was what was requested by the Obama administration.
Yes,
but
right.
They ended up getting over a billion, probably, from what I recall. And the CDC gets probably a third or half of that amount. And that money will be spent over the next couple of years to do vaccine research, to do some studies, but really, I imagine increasingly it's going to be more toward developing a vaccine, because now that we sense that we know a cause, or if not the cause, then I sense that not a lot of money is going to go toward long-term studies because the money's needed elsewhere. But it'll be spent over the next 2 to 3 years. And then they might come back next year or year after, asking for more money.
So I can imagine someone listening to this thinking that, okay, they're going to develop a vaccine. Well, that's a good idea. Well, getting Zika infections, a bad idea. But even if Zika isn't the cause of microcephaly, I don't have to be vaccinated. And although that is certainly true, in this right now, because of the, frankly, what I saw as hysteria in the media over this, isn't it possible that there could be a lot of pressure to vaccinate folks against this or something like it?
No question. I think one of the things you have to understand is whenever there is a vaccine developed, particularly one that requires a lot of millions of dollars worth of investment by private companies for R&D, at some point those companies, pharmaceutical companies and or the government agencies, will want to recoup their investment, particularly private companies. And so there will be lobbying by the pharmaceutical industry at some point in the future to, at the state level, at the state legislature level, to pass laws requiring, mandating the vaccinating pregnant women, perhaps the population at large, because now they've determined, they being government public health authorities, have determined that Zika can be transmitted by sexual intercourse. And so at some point, there's going to be a Zika vaccine is going to be added to the schedule. You're going to see advertisements perhaps in the future, like we see with the flu vaccine, like we see with the HPV vaccine, the Gardasil vaccine. And increasingly, there's going to be pressure for people to get vaccinated just in case. After all, what's the harm? Because these vaccines have been proven to be safe and effective. The truth is, vaccines have never been proven to be safe. In some cases, there have been studies to show that they're effective, like measles. But you really got to look into these studies because it's very complicated the way they conduct these studies. But very seldom have I run across a study, an authentic study that shows that a vaccine has been tested adequately on large groups to show complete safety. And so they're going to move quickly on this vaccine. they're going to move quickly to get as many people vaccinated around the world as possible, particularly in the areas where there are mosquitoes that carry, that are believed to carry the Zika vaccine, the Zika virus. And so the lobbying will be because there is money to be recouped and money to be made. And so the way you do that is you get as many people vaccinated as possible. So even though Zika has been around for decades and has been determined by U.S. health authorities to be relatively harmless, you know, usually causing a little bit of a fever, maybe some coughing, maybe some flu-like symptoms, but never been known to cause birth defects. Now you're going to get large portions of the population vaccinated, another vaccine for the population, and for what we don't know, maybe it wasn't the cause at all, and we're just simply adding another vaccine.
In your opinion, how should the science have been actually developed around this? This issue.
Well, keep in mind that it's not just science involved there, and you know, I don't want to be overly critical of the CDC because the CDC is doing its job essentially, which is to try to do things to protect the public. And when you are, but the CDC is also a government agency. It doesn't thrive only on science. It thrives also on politics. It's a political organization. If you're the CDC director and you go before a congressional committee and the committee is grilling you about what are you doing to protect the public against this possible Zika threat, well, you know, what the director and other health officials are going to be feeling the pressure to do is to be cautious and to say, well, if you give us money, we'll look into it. We'll do R&D and we'll try to err on the side of caution, and that means that we'll assume that Zika is a threat until we know more. And so because if it turns out that Zika were to turn out that Zika is behind the microcephalic cases in Brazil, and the CDC were to have done nothing other than wait for the science, the good science to be done. I mean, you can't really rush good science. Somebody's career would have been at stake. So it's not just about science here. When you're talking about government agencies, public health threats, there's a lot of politics involved. And unfortunately, I think that's partly what happened early on this year. There was pressure to err on the side of caution.
Well, I'm afraid we are entirely out of time. I want to thank you, Marco Caceres, for joining me today. How can people find out more about your work?
Well, it's very easy. Our publication is called The Vaccine Reaction, which is sponsored by the National Vaccine Information Center. They can go to www.thevaccinereaction.org, and they can go to www.nvic.org. We write articles on a weekly basis, and there's a search area on the publication. So if you want to find out all the things that we wrote about Zika, then just type in Zika and press search.
Great. Thanks very much for your time and for your work.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. Visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out, for easier extended access to our over 600 archive shows with our library card feature, a free stream of this week's show, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. If you want to reach us, please do so by email, admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett and Lena Berman. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.